Welcome to the In the Bag podcast. I'm your host from a mediocre Houston, Texas, and with me as always is Jazzy James Haldeman. How you doing, buddy?
I'm never mediocre, I can tell you that much. Always at least above average here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was like 65 and like kind of cloudy and rainy. It was just
just a day.
Just another day. Yeah, so we had an eventful tournament last weekend, and just like a precursor for everyone, because this will happen by the time this podcast is out, is that we'll be going to the hospital next weekend for my wife to be in labor, tomorrow night.
Literally tomorrow.
I'm like all screwed up, and so I have not done a lot of stuff here. I'm just mostly here to facilitate and point out some stuff that I find interesting and talk about last week. So if I am, you know, less informed than normal, which is hard to do, but it'll happen this week.
I do have a question. Yeah. Given that you are a feel guy, mm-hmm. right, more than a statistical guy, mm-hmm. I mean, you still have feelings, right? You still can get like some voodoo vibes from somebody about good things or bad things happening. So like, whatever you say, I would still trust it. He's still going with his gut here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a complete gut thing. I mean, I guess I definitely do have certain feelings about certain people this week, but it's a lot less than normal. I mean, I haven't even gotten it's like a vibe thing, right? Like I haven't like sat down and like gotten to the vibe of the course outside of whenever we played it and I shot a 9 over.
That was rough. Yeah. So we can talk about that a little bit in the course breakdown.
Yeah.
So whenever we get there, but we had the inaugural Slaughter versus James in the bag showdown for the tournament of the week. So
yeah,
we'll get there in a little bit.
Absolutely. So last weekend we played the WGC Workday at a inaugural course, and probably, I don't know, it may host a tournament at some point in its career again. The concession, we had our boy Colin Morikawa, fan favorite here, run away from the field, which was a bit surprising given how everything was going. Hovland was hot but couldn't catch him. Koepka struggled and he had some good. He just couldn't string it together and without avoiding some mistakes. And Scheffler also got pretty hot at the end, but he was in too deep of a hole before Sunday. So there was a lot of good to go around it. And I think the one thing that we absolutely nailed from last weekend, and I'm pretty sure we stressed this a couple times during the podcast, was to not fear the young guys, because the course history thing just was not going to play a role. And that absolutely happened. I mean, like four of the top five guys were all like young up and comers.
Yeah, we'll get to it when we talk about we were going to get into club up, club down, but my club up this week was just going to be, it's going to be a little nebulous, but it's the future of golf, right? Like we had a winner in Colin Morikawa. He's got 4 wins and he's only 24 years old. And those include now a WGC and a major, which is incredible. And like a pretty strong field at the, he's the king of Workday now. That's how that works, by the way. I think he's now CEO of Workday.
If Workday comes and substitutes for a tournament, then you gotta get him in.
Yeah. You gotta play Colin Morikawa in every Workday.
Who won the one before the Memorial? That was at the Memorial, but it was like the
he did. He, Colin Morikawa won the Workday.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was in a playoff, right?
Yeah, he beat JT. That was where JT made the bomb, yeah. And then he made the 20-footer,
yeah.
And then
yeah, okay, yep.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. He now owns Workday. He's won both the last two Workday championships.
So yeah, absolutely.
But then also, you know, you get he preys on Morikawa until the cows come home. I don't think people say that in California, but I just did. Then you have Hovland, who, you know, is a bad quadruple bogey away from winning this tournament. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I guess I'm just kind of clubbing up right now, so I don't need to do it when we get to it.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
But Victor Hovland also, if you look at strokes gained ball striking, which is strokes gained between driving and irons, he gained 6 more than the closest person on Saturday and Sunday. 6 more strokes on the field, ball striking Saturday and Sunday. It's absurd.
He was, and, he was. And that, I know, obviously Morikawa won, but he was the best golfer of the weekend. in my opinion.
I think it wasn't even close. He blitzed that golf course, which was impossibly hard on Sunday. There were no crazy low scores, right? Horschel was kind of stuck in neutral. You know, Brooks kind of made a run. Scotty Scheffler blitzed the course too. He was phenomenal on Sunday. And he's the third guy that you know, is in this young gun sort of category that just played out of his mind last weekend. But, I mean, we've talked about it before, but the game of golf is in great hands. I mean, Colin Morikawa and Victor Hovland are going to win double-digit tournaments. I don't think there's much of a doubt in my mind at this point. I think, you know, they have such repeatable swings. They make it look effortless. They hit the ball exactly where they want it. I remember, you know, on number one, when Hovland hit it in the trees, there had only been three birdies up until that point. And they're like, oh, he should probably play it to the middle of the green. And then he puts it to 5 feet. And I was like, oh, it's going to be one of those days from Hovland today. And then it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that we didn't get the, the excitement at the end of a playoff or a close finish. Because, you know, coming on to the tee box at 18, you know, Morikawa would have had to have made a huge mistake along with Horschel holding out to not win the golf tournament. But, God, those guys were awesome to watch all day on Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, like, I'm looking at it now. There wasn't a ton of guys that absolutely were super positive. There was maybe, I mean, obviously it's not a full field tournament, but there was like 21 guys that were above like 0.12 strokes gained total on the weekend. So,
right.
I mean, the amount of guys that played well was small. And I mean, I think we saw that with how the scores were at the end, and you saw guys like DJ struggle, you know, Bryson had a terrible round, but he's capable of doing that for sure. A couple guys I want to touch on though, that I, in particular for this weekend as well. Let's start with Lanto. I think he played the best of kind of this, like, I don't know who's in the 7,000 range for this weekend. His ball striking was fantastic. He was accurate enough with the drives, which I'm not so worried about this weekend, but he's still, as long as he's gaining strokes, right? Cause his accuracy is what it is, but he was gaining strokes. And then he didn't kill himself putting or around the green. So I like Lanto a lot this weekend. And that's
the weird thing about Lanto is that he didn't kill himself putting, but he lost strokes putting. A little bit. That really is his weapon when he's, yeah, but he doesn't lose strokes putting.
Mm, yeah. It's a reason to turn it for him to turn around, have a better weekend. Right. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yep.
And part of that I think is, of course, I do think good putters, there's different types of good putters, and he just may be one of those guys that's like, he's very good at like remembering like where things are and that kind of thing. Whereas I think other putters, like I think like DJ is this type of putter where he's like really good. Like if you put him on the course first time, he just has like a feel, like he can really feel the course. I don't know how to describe it, but that's how he looks like when he's putting. Right.
Right.
And so I don't know. I can't tell you one way or another for Lanto, but anyway, but I like the way he played. Munoz was awesome striking the ball. He didn't really gain much off the tee. I know he's a better driver than what he did last weekend, but if he's just going to be neutral and everything else and gain you 1.21 strokes on approach, I mean, he's going to have a successful tournament every weekend. So I like him for 6,700 this upcoming week. You know, my last guy, we were concerned about him coming into the weekend, and I'm not sure that, I can't say that I'm concerned about him anymore. I mean, Will Z just keeps putting up ridiculous numbers. And it's like, it's almost like Sung Jae last year, that we kept expecting the wheels to fall off, and they did after like the 27th straight tournament. But maybe he's just young enough where it just doesn't matter, and they're not even traveling that much. You know, it's like a couple hours away. So, you know, Will Z gains all across the board, except for he lost a ton of strokes putting. However, I think with the greens being so big that they were tricky, like when we played them, and obviously I'm not sure that they were completely accurate, but I feel as though that the strokes gained putting, whenever you have smaller greens, I feel like the strokes gained putting can vary widely based on a couple different putts, because it's just in general people are missing greens and therefore there are less putts, and therefore that makes the no one's putting as much, and so that makes the gap bigger. I think this weekend it'll be closer together with the strokes gained putting, and I don't worry about so much about that this weekend, especially if he's putting himself on the right shelf or in the right, you know, below the hole. I think he's very good at that. I think he can be very good at that. So as long as he knows what he's doing. But I guess the other issue is that this is a course that these guys have played, these veteran guys have played a lot. So they're going to know tricks maybe that he may not know. So that may be a reason to pump the brakes. But just in terms of just playing, Woolsey was great last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, ball striking travels. I don't care where you go. If you gain as many strokes ball striking as he did, then you're going to have a successful tournament. Two guys I'll just give a nod to that played okay last week, not great. I guess I'll throw three more guys in this section. Max Holma, who, you know, I doubted him last week, continues to churn out really solid finishes. The 22nd last week was good and could have been better had he probably not missed a few shots. Tyrrell Hatton was on fire ball striking wise. He was second to Hovland on the weekend in strokes gained ball striking. He just lost like 3 strokes per round around the greens, which is his weakness, but also at a place he didn't know that has a lot of tight lies. You know, I can forgive that, especially coming to a place where he's won. And then Matthew Fitzpatrick, after a disappointing Sunday at the Genesis, came out and played another really difficult golf course really, really well, which is what it's kind of his MO now when he comes over and plays on tour. So it's 2 good finishes from him at a place he's going to where he's very, very comfortable and plays well this week.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk about him a little more in the DFS portion of this. Just going to clubbing down, I think there were some guys that we definitely thought would have bad weekends. And then there are guys that we weren't so sure. I mean, I'm not concerned about DJ. DJ lost a ton of strokes off the tee. If his approach game is good, I'm not too concerned about it. And I think it's hard whenever if you're not playing to win, basically, at a certain point, it's just hard for you to get it going. Sure. And DJ is kind of like one of those guys, like where he's not. I mean,
he's not locked in from start to finish. Well, if he's not going to win a golf
tournament. And Roy grinds it out like no matter what, and so it's a little different. But man, can we talk about Harris English? Wow.
Oh, he was bad.
Wow, was he bad? I mean, it's probably the worst golf I've seen him play in a year and a half. Is that fair? Definitely, yeah. Since before the restart. I mean, he was terrible, and I'm concerned now. I need to pull up the stats and I'll look at them whenever you're talking, but this is his second or third straight.
Oh, I have
tournament.
Him up. I can tell you. I have him
up. Oh, I have the search from his tournament, from this tournament. I was just going to go back a couple weeks, like, because this is now a trend where he's not playing good golf. And ever since he's won, I'm starting to be very concerned. Either I don't know whether he's not sharp. I don't know if it was a flat. I mean, I don't feel like it was a flash in the pan because he just played so consistent for a long time. But we've seen this with other golfers. I mean, we saw Denny McCarthy go on a smaller scale, a 5 or 6 tournament run where he was like top 20, and now he can't make a cut. So I'm starting to be concerned there.
I think it's fair to be concerned about Harris English right now. I don't know that it's completely fair to Harris to compare him to Denny. Sir Dennis was doing this in like very weak field tournaments, where Harris English is doing it at the US Open and the Tournament of Champions and places where there were, you know, other really big names in them.
Sure. I was just using an example, a smaller example, but I'm just saying it can golf is funny like that. And it's funny like that even when you and I play, right? Like hole, we can't do anything. First 5 holes, you know, 5 through 10, we're like, oh yeah, if we got that approach going, we got our little swing path, it's all good. And then, you know, and then it falls apart again. It's just, golf is weird like that. And so it's not an indictment on him being a bad golfer. He could just be in a bad stretch at this particular moment. And I think he is.
Yeah, I would add that Harris English has probably never reached the highs that we have in golf, right? I mean, I would argue that point. But I also say, to speaking specifically about Harris English, this isn't the first time this has happened to him,
right?
Right. So for us, we've been doing this for, you know, 2.5 years, and we saw him go from a $7,000, you know, per tournament golfer on in DK. He was and below, and to build up to where, you know, he was winning the Tournament of Champions and that sort of stuff. But he was also finishing top 10 in majors, mm-hmm. you know, 3 years prior to that, in 2014, 2015. and then just kind of fell off the map for 3 years. I don't know if it was injury related or if his game just kind of left him, but you know, this has already happened to him where we saw him, you know, reach the highest of highs and then fall off, and he got back to that point, and we just kind of, you kind of assume, you know, this is a guy that's done it before, and he's obviously good, he's going to maintain this. But you know, I am worried enough about Harris English that he's an obvious fade for me this week. He went up $800 in price. Even if the field's weaker, he doesn't deserve that, especially at another really difficult golf course. But you know, I think long term I'm still pretty bullish on Harris English, but for this week I'm definitely not. That's my one big club down as well. So I'm glad you brought it up.
And then Mark Leishman, the only reason that he was salvaged anything was the fact that he putted well. Otherwise he was terrible off the tee. I mean, he's negative on approach, which is usually what he's good at. He's $8,200. I know he has a good course history here. He's probably not worth a complete fade, but he is so up and down right now that it's impossible to make a part of your core. A fair pivot just because of course history, but otherwise I'm staying clear. And then this guy didn't even play bad. I just like want to talk about it because it's just absolutely unfathomable. And then I want to compare it to someone else because I want to know what that person did to even get close to him. But Sergio played amazing golf until he got the putter in his hands. And it was like, I mean, he was leaving 20 foot putts like 6 feet short, like all weekend. It was insane. And then I see Tommy Fleetwood only lost 0.06 less strokes putting per round than Sergio, which makes me wonder what the hell he was doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw the Tommy Fleetwood putting stats when I was looking through from last week, and that absolutely blew my mind. Yeah, I don't think Tommy Fleetwood's like a world-beating putter, but he's usually a decent putter.
I kind of think he might be someone to rally around this weekend a little bit. That's my first field play.
Okay, I like it. I mean, he also has a...
you know, I don't even like Tommy Fleetwood, so...
You don't like Tommy Fleetwood, and you know the one place I like to play Tommy Fleetwood is at difficult golf courses, so...
Feelings are aligned.
Maybe he's a solid pivot in his position right now, in my opinion. Yeah, I stand on Tommy Fleetwood.
An overweight pivot.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk about who the plays are there because we're not in that section yet.
But yeah, that's
you gotta, all I got. You got to hang around if you want the plays. I'm not going to give them to you early.
Oh, man. We're doing radio leads now. I love it. Teases.
We're terrible.
But yeah, that's what I got for my club down.
All right, so we'll go get into the course now.
Yeah.
I guess we played it yesterday on PGA 2K, which if you have played, you know it's exactly like the course.
And if you want to play with us when we're doing it, like, you're more than welcome. Like, we can find two more people, and we'll gladly have you.
We could play like some alternate shot or something. We come up with a different format every week. That'd be fun. Yeah. But yeah, we played it yesterday. I took Slaughter down in a commanding fashion, I would say.
Yeah, it was.
By 6 strokes, I think we can get some real insight from Slaughter into the bunkers in the course. Because I think he touched... According to the Rick Rungood database, there are 84 bunkers on the course, and Slaughter was in at least 40 of them.
I think I literally was like probably 20, honestly. Because there were some I had, too.
It was pretty impressive to say the least. But yeah, we had our inaugural tournament. It was fun. So the one thing I think we took away from it first is just how long the course is and how thin the fairways are. Mm. Which we came out of it thinking driving was by far the most important thing. And then you go and you look at basically the regressions people run to see what has the most impact on winners throughout the years here. And it turns out strokes gained off the tee. And I think the most striking thing to me is usually... You know, the way Rick ranks them in his database is how they compare to every other course that was played over time on tour. And then he ranks them that way. So, like, it's not necessarily that strokes gained driving was the most important stat, even though it correlates the highest to winning. Right? Like, approach still might be more important for a course as it generally is. But on this course specifically, which is where it kind of differentiates itself, driving and strokes gained off the tee actually is the most important thing. You have to be long, you have to be accurate, you have to have your game together there. There's a lot of fairways with water on the left or on the right, a lot of dog legs and very thin fairways with a lot of fairway bunkers. So you gotta be able to put the ball where you want it that week if you want to win. That's my big takeaway from what we did playing the course.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, so depending on the wind, you know, the wind was not helping us at all. It was against us for a lot of it. So it made our shots even longer. But there were certainly cases where the wind, if it was blowing at our backs, that we would have had to make a choice about. It would have brought either water into play or bunkers into play that we wouldn't have normally had without the wind. So I think a player who understands their game is really dialed in with their distances, with their clubs. I think someone that just really is just in on the details of the game is going to do well here. The other thing I think was the hole location to me was so important. I felt like, felt like there were up to 8 holes where you were putting that the hole was on the, like, if it was like the hole was like on the left side, it was downhill right to left the whole way. And the hole was like 6 paces off. And there was basically no room to make yourself have an uphill putt. So, you know, it was shot shaping was super important, because both going against the wind, but just also where the placement of the pins were in context of how the greens are built. So that kind of stuff was all very important. So, you know, we unfortunately don't have like a data set or a data point for you to find out about who is really good at shaping the ball both ways. Because I think it's going to be important for almost every shot, I would say, for both off the tee. And I mean, you were hitting a lot of cut shots, but that's because you're left-handed, but it would have been different for a right-handed person. I don't know how to hit cut shots. I was just trying to do my draw every time, and that was unsuccessful. So I think, you know, trying to find some information about who's very good at that is going to be helpful this weekend. And obviously we have a lot of data from the years past to try to help us kind of see that out. But in general, I think that's kind of what I also took away from it.
Yeah, I would agree with you as well. I think shot shaping is incredibly important here. And I think it's interesting that, like, I think your best ball strikers or your best strokes gained approach players tend to be your best ball shapers. And I think I would stick to that. But, you know, Colin Morikawa is known for hitting his, like, baby fade, but he also can hit a draw when the time calls for it. You know, Rory moves the ball really well. And I think that, you know, your guys you look at as the best ball strikers also tend to be the best shot shapers.
But, like, for us, it's like JT does not like hitting fades.
Or no, he doesn't like hitting draws. I'm sorry. He only hits fades.
Right. So, you know, that would be an example, but you need to look into that this weekend. That's all I'm saying.
Right. I would say also to your original point about, you know, wind being important. That's the reason, part of the reason the course was so hard last year, right? So it was Molinari won it 2 years ago at minus 12. Rory won it 3 years ago at minus 18. But Hatton won it minus 4, and only 4 players finished under par last year. And that was a lot due. I mean, there were some rainy conditions, difficult conditions, but, you know, it was 25 mile an hour winds almost all week for them. We're not going to get that all week this week, but we are going to get a couple of days of really high wind golf. And so it's going to play really, really difficult for these guys for a couple days. And I think that'll definitely matter. I would say 2 other things that I would focus on this week. I think there are big numbers out there with a lot of water, all the bunkers, and some of them are deep, difficult to get out of. Even on the fairways. So I'm also going to be focusing on bogey avoidance, or, you know, total bogeys made, and looking to optimize that. And then I think the third most important thing this week is going to be able to take advantage of the par fives. I think that's where your best scoring opportunities come from, just in general, but in a course that I think is not going to yield a ton of birdies throughout the weekend, you're really, really going to have to take advantage of par five scoring.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's only 3. Is that correct?
No, there's this, 4. This is a par 72. So
moving on to the pricing here. There are 5 guys over 10,000. It's a lot more bunch this weekend in comparison to others. We have Roy at 11.5, Hatton down at 10. But, you know, only 500 difference between Roy and DeChambeau. 400 difference there. 400 difference between Reed and Hatton. So, I mean, Reed and Hovland. So it's a lot tighter at the top. I kind of, depending on how you like to do your lineups, like if you're doing a cascading, it's a lot easier to do a lineup like this, because now you can really get, you're not having to pick a top guy and, you know, say like, this is who I'm picking. Like, you can really pivot from one to another. Although, in this particular weekend, I have pretty strong feelings about who you should have at the top. And So I think that you shouldn't really pivot too much. At least if I was building a lineup, which I'm not building any lineups this weekend, but if I was going to, I would think I would be sticking to Rory. I mean, it's hard to get off Hovland. I do worry about his distance off the tee a little bit. I know that he's very accurate, but
He's 300 plus. He's fine.
yeah, it's just I'm a little concerned about it. But it's like, I don't know. And then I think Hatton's going to be very popular. And so I think I'm actually going to pivot away from Hatton. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think Hatton's worth your pivot. I think if you want to start rosters up here, I think you should start in one of three places. I think you should start with Rory. I think you should start with Hovland. I think you should start with Hatton. If you want to go with one of those three guys, by all means, do it. And I think you can build, really solid rosters with any of those three guys. Rory's course history here is immaculate. This is, I didn't realize how good it was until I pulled up the database today. He hasn't finished outside of the top six here in the last 4 years,
He's one of the
which for a
best Florida
difficult.
players. He loves playing golf in Florida.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, where he decided to live, and I think it's a golf course he's comfortable on. And I think, this was when they asked him about the equipment changes and the ball changes a few weeks ago. I think it was before Waste Management. He was like, if you want to make golf tougher, that's fine. I think it favors the best players, and would consider myself among that group. And I think when you go to a course that plays as difficult as this place does, year in and year out, and you see he's posted finishes like this, and I think that really is telling of how comfortable he is here and how good he is. I know Bryson has two top five finishes here in the last 3 years. He's a completely different player than he's been. I think even in 2020, I think he's tweaking more than he was in 2020 when they came here. And I think that's why we've seen him struggle a little bit. So I don't think Bryson should be the second most expensive golfer on the slate. I think that should be Victor Hovland. I think you're getting him at a huge discount this week. And I think people might be concerned about Hovland. Three straight top five finishes, including two runner-up finishes. And he doesn't have the greatest course history here. So my
He's been
hope is that
okay.
people get worried about Hovland. But yeah, he's been all right. And hop off of him. But I think this is maybe the most expensive we've ever seen Victor Hovland as well. At least for me, that I can remember seeing in a long time. So maybe that price tag will turn a couple people off. I don't think there's much of a reason to play Patrick Reed at a golf course which demands elite level ball striking. Like that's just not how he wins and contends in golf tournaments. He makes up for it around the greens and on the greens.
Yeah.
And so I think it's worth avoiding him here. And then you're right about Hatton. He could definitely be the highest owned golfer on this slate. And but I also
I
think
think it'll
if
probably
he
be
had,
Rory, but I think Hatton may be second.
I think if Hatton had just been like less half less bad around the greens last week, he would have contended, right? And I think his ball striking was excellent last week, and obviously he has played well here, won here last year, fourth 3 years ago. So I think he's a pivot more than a core play, but if you want to start your lineups there, I'm definitely okay with it.
Yeah, I think I think I would pivot with Bryson personally, because I mean I think the course history matters here, and but I'm almost locking in Rory. I think I have my concerns about Hovland. I'm completely with you on Reed. I just don't see a place where he has like popping upside. I know he's gained strokes here, 1.99 and 1.662 the last 3 years, but to me that's not good enough if you're paying for the fourth best, the fourth highest paid golfer. I mean, Hatton at least is two over 3.07, and it's 3.07 or above, and only Rory's done that. Or no, I'm sorry, Rory and Mark Leishman, which
Right.
who we've talked about. But that's fine, but he's gonna be an ownership thing, I think. I would wait to see what his ownership would be. I don't know. If it's
Yeah, I
like
mean, I'm just not.
25%,
I'm not playing Patrick
if
Reed.
it's like 25%, I'm not gonna play Hatton. If it's like 15% or 20%, he'll definitely be in some pivots, but I'd probably be underweight. I think it's just a weekend to go all in on Rory. I liked what I saw from I thought Rory would play well last weekend. I feel good about that. I feel vindicated in my belief, and I think he's really trending in the right direction. It wouldn't surprise me to see him win one of these before he goes into the Masters.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't know if he gets to say that he is the defending Players' Champion, right? Because they didn't technically have it last year. So I guess he gets to defend his title from 2 years ago. And I think he's kind of peaking at the right time. And, gained 1.1 strokes ball striking last week, was really good around the greens and really good with the putter. I think he's comfortable on Bermuda grass, given that, you know, that's what he plays on a lot. I think Rory's a great play. I think what's weird is that he's more cost prohibitive than like DJ and Rahm and those guys have been the last couple weeks. And I don't know that he's earned being cost prohibitive based on his play. I mean, his best finish is a sixth.
It's kind of why I like
it. Again, I'm not trying to. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, that could get talk people off of him, but I just don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. The 9,000 range, I think, is really interesting because there's a lot of guys who've either played well here or have played well recently. I mean, Fitzpatrick has. 3 of his last 4 years, he's been very good here. Sung J.M., 2 years in a row, he's absolutely crushed it here. I don't know if Sung J.M.'s like a worse golfer, but I think he is playing worse golf than he was at this point a year ago. But he's familiar with it. I think he may be pretty popular, so I'll probably be off of him. But he'll definitely be in a pivot because he's just shown the ability to pop, and I like that. I'm not a huge fan of Matsuyama. His best showing was 4 years ago, and he's been very mediocre here ever since. I know he played okay last weekend, but he really hasn't shown the ability to go above, like, you know, to really get into that 2.5, 3 strokes gained, where you're really, like, just getting a lot of birdies or, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm probably going to be off Hideki. Jordy's never played here. We know how he's been his last three tournaments. Three straight top tens, two of them top fives.
It's what, the Waste Management, the AT&T, and then 15th at the Genesis.
15th, yeah. Okay. And then Jason Day won here 4 years ago. Played pretty well his last two tournaments, but we know he's hit or miss. I think he's a good pivot, but I don't know if he would be a core play. Paul Casey, I like the way that Paul Casey's playing. I think I don't know if he's long enough.
Yeah, Paul Casey's pretty long. He's like 310 off the tee.
Is he 310? It doesn't seem like that. It's crazy. He's like 40, 45. That's really good for him.
Yeah, 309.7. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you talk about people that have the smoothest swings in golf. Paul Casey's
one. Absolutely. So Paul Casey, I think, has got to be right up there, perhaps even a core play. I like him quite a bit. I think Tommy Fleetwood would be my core play. Like, I would at least have one lineup set with him as a core play because he has great course history here. I know he missed the cut last year. But I think he is the type of game to play well. Like you said, he plays well at hard courses. I know his driving is what scares you the most out of anything, but he has success here, and I think he's comfortable here. And I think that's half of it with driving is just being comfortable on the tee box and just having conviction in what you're going to do.
Yeah, I agree. I like Tommy Fleetwood. He's the he's the pivot for me this week. He and Day are pivots off of Paul Casey. I think Paul Casey is the core play. Okay. We know this is a course where ball striking is paramount, and you're not, until you get down to Will Z, you're not really getting this kind of ball striking at this price again. And you know, we know Tommy Fleetwood has the potential to do it. Jason Day has the potential to do it. Jordy worries me this week. I mean, there's just so much water and so many bunkers. And this is a place where you can't compound your mistakes, right? You hit it in the bunker, you hit it to the front of the green, you try and chip and make your par and you move on. And that's just not who Jordan is.
And his distance will be prohibitive too.
A little bit, yeah. I agree with that as well. Hideki played well last week. What if I told you that one of the highest correlated stats was a consecutive streak or current streak without a three putt, and that Hideki Matsuyama is currently leading that stat? Does that change your mind at all? Doesn't change mine. Not playing Hideki.
Nope.
I just think he's overpriced. I know he played solid last week. He's overpriced for not having a ton of success here. You know, even with that no three putt streak, he's losing 0.4 strokes to the field in putting. Like, that's so bad. That means you hit it to 5 feet and you miss it every time.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is to me that that means you hit it to 5 feet and you miss one of those per 18 holes, which is a lot because the 5 foot make is like 88% or something for professionals, like five footed in.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're losing that one stroke per round. But the point is to me, like whenever I'm looking at all of this, how I've been doing this lately and I've been finding success is that you at least have to show the ability to pop. And if you don't, if you're not able to even get into the two strokes per gain either recently or at this particular tournament, then there's just no reason to play you. And I just don't have a reason to do it, especially when there are guys surrounding him that have that ability. So
yeah,
it's a no-brainer. Like I'd almost rather play Spieth than Matsuyama, honestly.
I'll differentiate myself from you there. I just think Spieth is too haphazard to.
Oh, I think his ownership is going to be super low, and so I think he's a fair pivot. Ooh,
interesting.
I would have some Spieth.
I will not, but I definitely understand the idea behind it. And then, you know, I think Fitzpatrick is a core play if you can fit him. I think he's playing that well right now, and I think this is the type of course he feasts on. His ball striking stats from last week were actually pretty good. I believe he gained over a stroke ball striking, which isn't really where Matthew Fitzpatrick lives. He lives with the flat stick. And so if he's going to do that and putt as well as he usually does, he's going to have a really good week this week. So I think if you can fit Fitzpatrick, you can't really do it with Rory, but if you want to make like Hatton or maybe Hovland your most expensive guy, I mean, Slim Pickens down there, but you can work on it. Then I think Fitzpatrick is a fine play, and then Sungjae's a pivot off that. I think back to back top three finishes here. You gotta look at him. I think he's a Florida guy. You gotta remember he also won the Honda last year. He loves to putt on Bermuda. This is kind of where he plays well, even though he had a middling performance last week. But I think you want to be at the top of this. You want to live at the top of this, and you want to live at the bottom of this. Fitzpatrick, M, Day, Casey, Fleetwood. I think Matsuyama and Spieth should get left with low ownership in the space.
Yeah, I think Day is probably even teetering. Like he's definitely fifth out of those five that you just named.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's not a core play. He's a pivot, but I think Jason Day is playing better, like the type of golf we saw when he was on that run at the Workday and the Memorial, right, where he played just really good. Solid golf for like 3, 4, 5 weeks, and it kind of feels like we're there again. The short game looks really crisp again. He's putting the ball well, and he's driving the ball well. And if his approach play shows up, then he's going to finish in the top 20. If it doesn't, then you know we'll see where the grinding gets him. And this is a place where grinding is important.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't gain strokes approach last week and finish what 18th. So next we have the 8,000 range, starting with Billy Horschel at 8,900, who gets quite a price bump here. And then all the way down to Kevin Na. This range is interesting to me because there seems to be two competing dynamics here, except for two individuals. The first being either that you are playing well now but have not good course history, or you are not playing well now and you have good course history. So, like, for instance, Horschel has not been good here in 3 years, but is playing great golf, and it's... Horschel is a Florida guy. He went to the University of Florida. I think that's pretty well discussed that whenever he shows up at all these tournaments.
Ad nauseum at this point. Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think I can do it for that expense.
Right.
But especially, it's just he's being very, very much buoyed by his putting. And so I know that he drove the ball really well last weekend. And kind of like you can kind of get in a zone with driving, I think, as well, that can carry over from week to week. So maybe that does carry him over a bit. But I'm very concerned about his approach play. In the same vein, Louis Oosthuizen is playing really well right now and has never played well here. I think I would have some pivot of Louis, but I'm not loving it. I think there are guys I'm looking at guys that can really pop here, and the two for sure I'm gonna have would be Cousin Burns and Max Homa. Neither of them have great course history here, but they just have been playing so well. I can't imagine not having these guys. Each of them have a three strokes gained to the tournament, which is better than anyone else can say except for Billy Horschel. And then Mark Leishman would be the other guy. I'm a little worried about his off the tee game, but I think that he I think that if his approach game just turns around, like he just didn't have it last weekend for some reason, but he's been playing pretty good up until last weekend, and he has great course history here. He may be too popular for me, but I like the way, I think he's mostly trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And I think I agree with you for the most part of this. I think maybe I just was zoned out or looking at stats when you said it, but I think the core play here is Will Z.
Oh, Will Z. I didn't know. You didn't zone out. Okay. Will Z, he has gained a lot of strokes in almost every tournament, but he's only had one tournament where he's like pseudo popped.
What was that? At Farmers. Torrey Pines, yeah.
Like the rest, he's been around 1.31, which is like good, probably good for a top 25. But you start paying $8,600 for a guy, you want that guy to have the ability to get you in the top five. And I'm not sure that he's shown that.
I mean, he popped at the U.S. Open, right, too?
That is true. That was a while ago, but yes.
Which is another really difficult course. Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I'd fade him. I was just thinking about core plays. I'm just not sure I'd make him a core play.
I think my three core guys are Will Z in this range, and you can fit them into your lineup however many you can or however you want to, whatever the price calls for, are Will Z, Sam Burns, and Kevin Na.
You like Kevin Na.
Those are the three guys you're looking to play. Well, I find an interesting trend. Oh no, this, not Kevin Na. Kevin Kisner.
Okay. I was getting confused. Why Kisner?
Well, we'll look at every other year for him. Second, 100th, 23rd, 100th. That's a miscut. And then this year, he's got it, baby. No, I actually am not on Kevin Kisner. His ball striking was really bad last week.
It was.
His putter and short game were really good, but his ball striking was not.
Do you think Kalkrak is... Like, are we past this, like, he's maybe a decent enough putter where he doesn't just out-putt everybody on courses that he knows that everyone else does it? Or, I mean, he was pretty good last weekend, obviously gaining 2.37 strokes per round, but he has some half-decent course history here.
I think he can just putt now. I think he's a pivot, which means I actually only have two core plays. I think Will Z and Sam Burns are core plays. And then I think, you know, Leishman, Kokrak, and Na are good pivots, as well as Oosthuizen and Molinari. And I think Molinari, to the point you were talking about,
I like Molinari quite a bit. I think he'd be another core play for me.
So he's interesting in the fact that he doesn't have this competing dynamic you were talking about.
Both.
He is playing well, and he has phenomenal course history.
Yeah, I like him quite a bit. I totally overlooked him. I had him in my head, and then I just didn't. I'm sorry, Frankie Onions. I won't do it again.
And then I think Usti's a really good pivot. I don't. This is like a couple weeks ago, and Louis Oosthuizen's a much better player than Mackenzie Hughes. Where I said it didn't make sense that Mackenzie Hughes never played well at the Genesis because the two things that are important, he's good at. And this is a difficult course, and Louis Oosthuizen's a really good ball striker that demands ball striking. That's his alley. I don't understand why he's never played well here. And so I'm willing to take a little bit of Usti as a risk. Given his course history, but he was just so good last week. I mean, he putted the crap out of the ball, but I think he's also just a good Bermuda putter, so that's fine with me.
Yeah, hold on. Something's very concerning. Not concerning. I feel very confused about this, and so I need to look this up, because from what I'm seeing, it's like he's being very much carried by his putter in a short game, and that just doesn't seem like that's right. So I wanna look this up here.
I mean, Louis Oosthuizen is gaining 0.6 strokes per
round. He's gaining 1.11 strokes putting. That's for 2021. So this is 26 rounds of golf. And he's losing strokes on approach. And he's, man. So, well, hold on. Let me shorten this up. Let's do like over the last like month and a half.
I mean,
he's still down on, he's still losing strokes on approach. I don't know, man. I'm a little concerned about him.
I mean, that's fair, but he's a grinder.
Yeah. I mean, look, no one loves Louis O more than me. I'm just concerned.
I don't think he's a core player. I just think he's worth the pivot.
Cause he can pop. He could like win the tournament. Like wouldn't surprise me.
But I mean, the only section of this that really excites me is 87 to 84. Burns, Holma's a good pivot, a good play. Zalatoris and Francesco Molinari. The rest of that, you can take it or leave it. I think it's worth having some Leishman. It's worth having some Kokrak and Kisner because they can pop. and worth having some Usti. But outside of that,
I think
I think he only went small percentages of those other guys.
I think
guys,
I would I would rank them Molinari, Burns, Leishman, Willsey, Kokrak. I think that's how I would rank them.
Willsey,
you like Burns, you like Willsey the most.
Molinari, Homa, yeah. I clubbed up the future of the PGA Tour, and I think he's part of that.
Absolutely. I'm and maybe this is just, and this is like, this could completely, you know, completely be wrong, but the same reason that I was just like, don't worry about the young guys last week, I think it's a reason to be weary of people that have never played this course. So, especially, I mean, Willsey's not, he's going to a lot of courses that he's never played before. And I don't know, at some point, not only are you going to get like physical fatigue, but you're going to get like mental fatigue from like having to remember like different greens, like where it just doesn't come naturally to you. And so that does concern me a bit with him. And maybe I'm just overreacting, but I think that is, I'm more leery of the younger guys this weekend than definitely than I was last weekend, but in general.
When you hit it as close as Will Z does, it don't matter. That green don't matter. I will say I'm more bullish on Sam Burns. Just came across the fact that he is he's 0.26 strokes better on Bermuda grass putting. He is a Bermuda specialist than he is on average.
And it's so, what's down. It's what's down here. Like, I mean, he's from Louisiana, yeah, but it's all the same.
Right, right.
And he's excited about getting a new cousin. So cousin Burns is here.
That's true. He's gonna win this one for you guys.
Yeah, I bet we better get a shutout. Come on, cousin Burns.
Wire to wire.
Moving on to the 7,000 section. I have a funny. I have something funny on this section. But we have Cam Davis 7,900 all the way down to JT Poston 7,000. Cam Davis is just right off the bat someone I love, someone whose profile fits, someone who's popped. At least when I say pop, they've gone over two strokes per round for two tournaments. So he qualifies for that. Then there are guys. Justin Rose has played well here, not playing well now. Generally not a Justin Rose fan. I just don't think he's that good at golf. So I'm not going to be on him. I think a fair pivot, a good pivot, is Charlie Hoffman. I know we make fun of Charlie Hoffman all the time, but he just randomly pops. He's kind of like a funny-looking Kevin Na, and I don't see a reason to not have him in a rotation of sorts. He's too risky to be a core play, but I like generally what I see. Luke List is exactly, I think he'll be very highly owned, but he fits the exact profile that you're looking for here.
Phenomenal course history as well. Phenomenal.
And he's playing well. I mean, I know he didn't play well at his last tournament, but three good tournaments in a row. He can get hot, no doubt about it. The other guy that I'll mention here, and I laugh about it because so last weekend, you know, I turned James on to Rasmus Højgaard, and who didn't play well.
Oh, I forgot to club him down. I forgot to club you down. Club me down.
You could have clubbed me down after our round. I was listening back. I was trying to find like where I was talking about him at the U.S. Open, and I got down to the point because I knew he was like in the 7,000-ish or like below range, and you were like, I don't even know what Henrik Stenson's been doing. Probably some weird Swedish things. And one of those weird Swedish things is playing well at this tournament. So I think you at least have to have Henrik Stenson here as a pivot. Oh man!
I guess I'll say it again. I don't know what Henrik Stenson's even been doing. Probably some weird Swedish things.
Yeah.
The Swedes, man. You never know.
It's true.
This range is actually really cool. It has a lot of my favorite plays in the
tournament. Okay.
And I think it's where you decide where you're going to go. I think Cam Davis is an obvious choice, is a favorite play in the tournament, gaining strokes across the board for the season. Phenomenal driver of the golf ball, phenomenal iron player, coming off a lot of really good finishes in a row. So I'm a huge fan of Cam Davis this week. My favorite play this week, and I'm hoping he gets some ownership eaten up because of the names he's beside, which are Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler, and Lanto Griffin, and Price is Cameron Tringali.
You do love Cameron Tringali.
I mean, you look at this field. He's probably the
no. He's good. Fourth. He's playing great.
He's a top 10 iron player on tour. His driving accuracy hasn't suffered, but he's now hitting the ball over 300 yards. I don't think he's getting the respect he deserves at this price for how well he's played recently. And he was phenomenal at the Genesis. Finished top 26. So he had another really good finish in a strong field. Go down. Henrik Norlander plays difficult golf courses really, really well. I know he missed the cut at the Genesis, but he had played well. That was his sixth week in a row on tour, traveling a lot in that time span as well. I think at 7,200, you can do a lot worse than Henrik Norlander.
Yep, I agree.
Corey Connors, he has never really popped here, but you're only paying $7,300 for him this week. Wait, has he missed two cuts here?
Oh, yes. That's bad. And
I was looking at Ian Poulter's stats, who I do not condone playing, but
Ian Poulter, I think at this point, he's kind of like a safe option, right? Like, he's like just made the cut every year.
I guess.
He's never popped, though, that's and scary. We're trying to win it. So I think the fact that he's the most he's gained is 1.32 strokes, and he hasn't played a lot recently. I don't know how he's been doing in Europe. I assume that's where he's been, but he hasn't played well enough to pop. There are two names I actually wanted to ask you about. First being Maverick McNealy, I think is a worthy pivot. Obviously has shown the ability to pop. We don't have a lot of information on him, and I do worry about people that haven't really played here, although he's played here twice. I think that he's at least a worthy pivot. And then my second one that I am contemplating making a core play, because this guy has shown whenever he is doing well, he does really well, is Adam Hadwin. And he like lost his way last year, was terrible for most of the year. Seems like he's regaining form, has good history here. He hasn't done amazing here, but he's done pretty well. Especially if you're only paying like, what is he, 7,400 is that what I'm saying? So,
yep.
Yeah. So I like Adam Hadwin a little bit. I don't know how you're feeling about that.
I think Adam Hadwin's going to make the cut. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your upside is with Adam Hadwin, but I think he's a cut in like a top 40 finish.
He almost gained three strokes in 2017.
Yep.
Around. So.
Yeah. Adam Hadwin has not been that good for a little while, in my opinion, right?
Oh, I agree. Like, I mean, he lost his way. I'm not doubting that at all. I just think he's been playing a little better. Yeah, maybe he's not worth the court play. You're probably right. He's worth the pivot, though.
I think he's worth the pivot. That is
And
fair.
I think Rio is, too.
Is Henrik's... Yeah, I think Rio is definitely worth a pivot. I mean, I think he's worth the pivot in the same reason I think, like, Corey Connors and Henrik Norlander are worth a look this week. Because, I mean, these guys are elite. No, well, not elite, probably. I mean,
Griot probably is.
Actually, Corey Connors and Griot are elite ball strikers. Yeah. Norlander, not quite there. He's really good, but he's not elite.
And Griot's shown a lot of upside, both like recently and on this course. So,
correct. Yeah.
I like Griot quite a bit. I think Norlander is probably at this point more consistent than Griot, a little bit more. But maybe. In the short term, when Norlander's hot, he's just going to continue to play hot. Whereas Griot, like, picks and chooses over a 5 week span, like whenever he's going to play well. But I think I like Norlander a touch more than Griot, but they're in the same boat.
I think Norlander's a better golfer, but I think that either one of them can pop in any given week, and I think this is a week where you can give the nod to Griot. I'm definitely okay with that. I think your core plays in this range are Cam Davis, Cameron Tringale, and Luke List, and then I think you pivot off that.
I like that a lot.
I think it depends on List ownership, but which I think I agree with you. I think can get pretty high. People love cheap guys with good course history, and that's kind of where he fits. But I think there are just so many interesting pivots, right? You know, you get Rose, who's shown the ability to play really well here, even though he's not been good recently. You get Lonto Griffin, who is above 7,000. I'm a little wary, but he's playing really, really good golf right now, and finished top 40 here last year. For 7,700, you can do a lot worse. He plays difficult golf courses pretty well. I think you get the opportunity to play Hadwin and Siwoo. Nope, no Siwoo. I have a rule now. Just kidding. You could play. You could maybe play Siwoo.
He can pivot.
He's a little short off the tee. He's not a bad pivot. You get Griot as a pivot. Connors as a pivot. Get Norlander as a pivot. And then you get like Benny on. And this is a week I am completely on board. If people want to play Keegan Bradley, roll Keegan Bradley out. He's been playing some okay golf recently. And this is a ball striking type
course. I wouldn't do it. I think they're like, I'd much rather play all the other guys that are like the quote unquote elite ball strikers, like Griot or Connors or whatever. I mean, they've just shown more upside. I mean, we're talking about Keegan Bradley quote unquote playing well, and the most he's gained is like 1.06 strokes per round, and he's never gained more than a stroke per round at here, although he's made the cut a bunch. So
I don't think Keegan Bradley's ever missed the cut. But was he the one I was reading about?
But he's, I would not do it with Keegan. He just is not high enough. He's not going to finish high enough. I mean,
he's not a core
player. Like, Siwoo is like the perfect guy. Like, you never want to make your core, but always want to make a pivot because he could just always go out and win. Same with Kevin Na, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think there are certain guys that are pivot guys, and I definitely think that Siwoo and Kevin Na fit that. I just think, I don't think there's a lot of safety at a golf course that's this difficult. And so I'm okay with using Keegan as a pivot because I think he makes the cut.
Now, this just kind of hypothetically thinking about this, if I was going to lock in Rory and you're doing the cat, and I, you know, recently I've been doing the cascading approach, that gives you three pivot spots at the top, and really four because you can only get 19 rosters out of it. You could use four more pivots here off of your core list, whatever, because you want to get, I think you do want to get a handful of different guys here, because I like a lot of the guys here, and I think, but at the same time, I also think it's kind of a crapshoot. So I think you should try to maximize your portfolio in this range in terms of just spreading it evenly out.
Yeah, I definitely think that's fair.
And then going below 7K, there are some guys that I think that are playing pretty well. It's really hard to marry the course history. You either have guys like Keith Mitchell, who's somehow played here twice and played well, but he, in my opinion, he was a lot better golfer 2 years ago and last year at this time.
Oh, no doubt.
Than now.
No doubt.
And so I'm completely off of him. Lucas Glover has some good course history here, but he's not really playing well either, and he's got putting yips like crazy. Wyndham Clark is interesting to me. I mean, he at least can hit the ball far. Matt Wallace has got some good course history here, and I don't know, he's a guy that typically also plays hard course as well. These English guys typically do. There's not a ton I love down here, though. The other guy, like my favorite play, honestly, and he's not even like playing that well, is like Dylan Fratelli. He's like pretty interesting. Like, he's certainly very talented, and his approach game sucks at the moment, but like, I expect his iron play to turn around because he's a much better iron player than what he's been. Tough course to figure it out on, though, of course.
Right, for sure. What do we think about, and I'll give you two names. I think there's one name that I feel very good about, very confident about, and that's Sebastian Munoz.
Yes, okay. Well,
I think in these last two tournaments, he started to find himself a little bit, especially on Sunday of last week. He was really,
if he can just return to driving the ball 70% of what he was whenever he was in that run last year, like, he's going to be really good, because I think at this point he's I'm not like concerned about his iron play anymore. Like, it was like kind of like the opposite last year whenever he was playing really well. Like, his iron play was so, but his driver, you know, his off the tee game was really going to carry him. He was like a great man's like Johnny Vegas or whatever. But now he's kind of like really honed in on his iron game, which I love. And you just got to worry about whether or not his off the tee game, but it's both his accuracy and his distance. Though, like, I just don't feel like his distance is like, what is this distance? I mean, I just don't feel like it's as good as it's been.
Munoz hits the ball,
I think you would tell me it would be like 302. Like, I feel like it should,
he hits it 300.
Yeah, like, on average. I feel like he should be a little higher than that.
That's fair,
but again, like, I mean, he played well last weekend. I like the way he played. If he turns that around even just a little bit, he's going to be he's underpriced at the very least.
Okay. I'm going to give you three names, and I'll give you reasons for each of them, and you tell me what you think. This is supposed to be a ball striking course. Mm-hmm. I feel like Doc Redman took a little bit of time away from the game, and hopefully he's got some things right in the last week or so. Do you think it's worth taking a flyer on Doc Redman at 6,400? I'll keep going. Again, we get Harold Varner III underneath $7,000. He's got all the ball striking talent in the world at 6,800. Okay course history. He's got a 36, a miscut, and a 34th. hasn't been playing great, wasn't that great at the Genesis, but again, like, you feel like that talent has to match up at some point. And then the most interesting play down here, in my opinion, is Patrick Rogers. He was so bad for so long. He finishes 12th at the Genesis. He finished 30 last week.
Two weeks ago.
In Puerto Rico.
Last week.
He played in Puerto Rico last week at the Puerto Rico Open. And then his course history of the last 3 years, 7th, 46th, 24th. Like, I just find that.
He's on a heater, and I think you kind of ride it.
Yeah.
Because he's had three good tournaments in a row. Puerto Rico to there is not a far flight, so you don't really got to worry about that. I don't hate that. I like that better than at Doc Redman. You're just like, in Doc Redman and Varner, you're both just hoping that it turns around, which is fair. I mean, you're kind of hoping for a lot of things in this price range. I don't think I'd want to like put my cap on that. Is it worth a pivot? Yeah, it's worth it. That might be worth one or two of your 20 lineups, or maybe 10 of your 150 or something like that. I think I'd rather go with guys that have either shown the ability to do well here or shown the ability to do well currently. Like Cameron Percy, that would interest me more.
He had the three-hole lead last week. Or three third-round lead last week. He's leading going into
Sunday. It's three good tournaments in a row for him. I like Munoz. I think your reasoning for him makes sense. There's reason to believe in his upswing, right? Like, as a player. Like, I get it. I don't get it for Varner. Or for who's the other guy? Oh, Doc Redman. I just don't understand it. The other guy that I would say is Kyle Stanley.
Yeah, he's played pretty solid golf as of late, and has two solid finishes here. I had not seen that name yet, but as soon as you said it and I looked, I don't hate Kyle Stanley. I think he possesses the correct qualities to do well here. The other name I see is Doug Gim. That was the other name. Yeah. Doug Gim's below $7,000. We have the Doug rule as well.
So I think I would be going. Core plays would be Gim, Munoz. I don't think Rogers is worth a core play, but I think if you want to be overweight on him as a pivot, that's fine. But then and then the last guy would be Gim. I think that would be my three.
I think I don't have a lot of faith in the guys down here, and that takes me back up to the top, which makes it hard for me to play Rory as my most expensive guy, because you're gonna have to fit these guys in. And maybe more than one of them to have a really good roster this week, and that worries me a lot.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I think you can do it because you're like let's say you go Rory, Fleetwood, and then you have, I don't know, let's say Gim, 6,600. I mean, that's pretty cheap. I think you're still going to be able to get Cam Davis and like someone in the middle of the 7K range in. Or maybe you can even do. Let me fire it up here.
I'm doing it right now. Rory, Fleetwood,
Gim. And where does that leave you?
7,600. Not as much as we think it is. Like, are you playing Luke List as a core play then?
Gim. Yeah. So does that make Luke List a core play? 7,633. Yeah, I guess it does. I mean, you could go, like, all right,
You could go List Tringali Davis, but then you're also capped at 50,000, too.
Right. So then that just makes all your pivots go down, but that's not terrible. I mean, so let's say, all right, so Cam Davis, and then what'd you say it was?
Tringali. And List.
So if I do List, then I have 7,800. So you could go Adam Hadwin or Grillo, and just kind of rotate there. I mean, I personally, I'm all for this like rotating 7,000 range, because I'm like, you like it a little better than I do, but I think I would just be trying to get like a ton of different 7,000K guys in here, because I just don't know which one's going to play well.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But I understand what you're saying. It is difficult.
I like the upside Rory provides, but you're going to have to really pour over.
Maybe you go Rory, Rory all the way down to Will Z, or Rory all the way down to Burns, and then you have a little more room here.
Yeah, you could do that. I'm concerned we're giving up a lot of winning upside, and again, I think Rory has the most winning upside in the field, so I guess it's correct to play him in that sense. I'm just trying to figure out where you start and who you really focus on to give yourself the most winning upside up and down the roster. And I think you could do it with Rory, but I think it's going to take some really creative lineup building. Is all I'm really trying to say.
Yeah, so you could do Rory, Cam Davis, Burns, Hadwin, Tringali, Kim, and you still have $500 left over. Okay. I don't hate that. I mean, the thing is, I do like a lot of the guys in the 7,000 range. I'm just not as 100% surefire. Like, this is a guy that I love. Like, I absolutely feel that way about Cam Davis. Not so sure about the rest of them.
Okay. I just got a thing for Cams, I've realized. Davis and Tringali. those are my guys. Every week.
That's true. And I feel like there's another one, too. Well, Cam Smith's been playing well. We haven't really talked about him, but
can't. Well, I do love that mullet. I do love the locks. Oh god,
that mullet is something. Yeah. So I mean, like, who? I mean, out of all these guys, who's drawing you in? Who are you fading? Who are you going to be like too overweight on? I mean, I think if you're going to play Rory, I mean, I think you're almost going to have to say like Will Z or Sam Burns is like my guy, right? Like that's gonna be your Mickelson play. I think Fleetwood's my draw. He just keeps intriguing me the more I'm talking about it. My fade though, the fade one's a toughie. I had to think about that one. I don't know.
I mean, my fade, I started at the top, I'll stay at the top. I said I wasn't gonna play him. No Bryson, no Patrick.
Okay. Green.
That's where my fades are this week. My baby draw is actually going to be Paul Casey.
Okay. I like Paul Casey.
I think Paul Casey's going to have a really, really good tournament this week. He's been playing excellent golf. I think his game's in a great place. His short game isn't killing him right now, as we tend to think it does with Paul Casey. I just kind of like him as a person. So I'm high on Paul Casey. And then my Mickelson play will probably be whoever I pick at the bottom and decide to have a lot of ownership of, I guess, right? Like, Munoz is probably my Mickelson play. Because I am going to base my core down there around the fact that I believe Sebastian Munoz is going to play well.
Gotcha.
And because I just don't think there's a lot down there. And so if he doesn't play well, then it's going to be tough for my rosters to really, really pop. And so we'll see what happens. I was right last week. Hopefully I'm right again this week.
I think Horschel will be my fade. I think
he'll
be pretty popular.
He's never won in Florida on the PGA Tour.
The last thing I want to say, and I completely skipped over his name. I think Taylor Gooch is also worth a pivot. I'm not sure that he's worth a core play because I don't know what his upside is. But he is playing pretty well, and he's got kind of a well-rounded game, but you know he's not super long off the tee, but he makes up for it by being one of the best long iron players in the game. So I just wanted to throw his name out there before we signed off.
No, I think that's I think Taylor Gooch is always at least worth a look. Mm-hmm. Victor Hovland almost has lower odds, almost has shorter odds to win this golf tournament than Bryson DeChambeau, which is something I thoroughly enjoy and I love. But not anything I expected to see.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's all I got. I mean, obviously I'm not going to be watching this tournament at all. So I hope everyone does well.
Yeah, we all obviously send you and Julie all of our energy first off, because I assume you're going to be exhausted for a long time.
Yeah, forever.
But I hope everything goes well with you guys and we get a report of a beautiful, healthy, happy baby and an excited and happy mom and dad.
Well, I'll send it out. You know, I think what we need to do, actually, James, and this is a great idea, I'm just going to throw it out live on air here, is...
We're not even going to run it by Julie first.
It has nothing to do with that, actually. I was thinking about, oh, we'll put him in like an in the bag onesie or something stupid. But I was like, no, we should actually make like golf towels.
That's not the worst idea.
I mean, our colors, like, are, you know, it's pretty good.
Great. They're Masters colors. Masters colors. Oh, wait, we're green and blue, not green and yellow.
Yeah, we've got green and blue.
Green and blue is pretty good.
It's a nice color palette.
Wow, are we going to start merchandising? I don't know if we have enough downloads to start merchandising, but I bet we could guilt people into buying our
stuff. If we hit 50 downloads, we can probably do it.
That's a deal.
50 download challenge. Look,
the 50 download challenge. If you do that, we'll make some towels for people to buy. How about
there we
that?
Go. Well, I know you want it with me, baby.
Thanks for tuning into the In the Bag podcast. If you want to interact with the show, you can find us on Twitter at In the Bagcast, Slaughter at Slaughter, and myself at James Paul Ford. You can also leave comments, rate, subscribe, whatever you like, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us there. Good luck to all of you this week, and we hope you'll tune in again next week to make sure you have the right clubs and the bag. Thanks again. Stay safe.